Find me a movie where the rich guy is a good guy. Find me a movie where the sales guy is a good guy. And notice they're all guys. Don't even try to find me a movie with a rich woman that isn't married to a rich man. So, I mean, I think so much of it boils down to that story and that programming is the idea of like helping people and making money do not feel congruent to a lot of women. I think that same thing has followed us into entrepreneurship, where a dude's like, absolutely, I can charge, you know, 10 grand for that. And woman's like, I'm not sure. I've not done it before. So I'm actually going to charge, well, I'm going to charge 3,500. So I think it really has a lot to do with that same idea of like that belief in ourselves to really show up and ask for and demand the market rate for what we do.
Welcome to Life After Corporate, your ultimate guide for making the leap from corporate leader to entrepreneur. I'm Deb Boulanger, entrepreneur, executive leader, and founder of the Launch Lab for Women Entrepreneurs. This is your time to break through the glass ceiling once and for all and get your ticket to the C-suite. Come back each week to get the leading strategies, advice, and tools that will give you the skills and confidence you need to replace your corporate paycheck. Are you ready? Let's go. Welcome back to another episode of Life After Corporate, my friend. And if you are new to our show, welcome home. This is where you get the straight scoop on what it really takes to launch and grow a sustainable coaching or consulting business. And today we're talking with my friend Ryan Dowdy, who I'll introduce you to in just a minute, about the future of business is female. And that resonates with me because, of course, I think entrepreneurship is the new feminist movement. So Ryan and I are going to have a great conversation around that today. And I feel like this is the first interview in the month of September. So whenever you're listening to this episode, we recorded it right after Labor Day. So it's like back to school, you know, it's like back to school. Are my pencils sharpened? Do I have a new backpack? Am I wearing a new outfit? And it's so funny to be an entrepreneur and just walk across the hallway from my bedroom into my office and get my day started. And so that's one of the perks of being a woman-owned business. But anyway, I digress. My guest today is Ryan Dowdy. Ryan is the founder of Be In The Room, Conscious Leadership Collective for Women in Business. And Ryan did everything right in her career. And maybe you can identify with her story. She had her dream job, a 6-plus-figure salary. She was married with kids, had a nice home, and still woke up one day feeling completely unfulfilled. She knew something wasn't right. She realized it was because she was chasing a dream that wasn't hers. And as an expert in sales, she created a Facebook community of over 7,000 women looking to follow their dreams of starting a profitable business. Women began joining her sales training program, not only for the incredible knowledge that she shares, but for the community of being with a group of other women on that path as well. And Ryan and I share that same dream of waking up one day saying, is this all there is? You know, living in the beautiful home with the kids and everything else. So Ryan, welcome to Life After Corporate.
Hi, Deb. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So the burning question that everyone wants to know is, what made you leave that 6-figure salary and that cushy job to launch your own business? What is your life after corporate story?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I spent 15 years in a corporate career. It was good. I was never one of those people that hated my job or anything like that. I got to travel the world and meet amazing humans and work with amazing humans. But really where my opportunity to grow and change came after I had secured the dream job. I was the director of sales for a digital marketing agency. I was able to get off the road, be present. I had just had a baby, right? I was able to be home and be present with my family. And it took me about 3 or 4 months, Deb, to really realize this can't be it. Like, this cannot be all that I was put on this planet to do. And I wish I could tell you that like entrepreneurship was the first thing that came to mind. But I just thought I needed an industry change, right? I was like, I just need to do something different, be somewhere different. And that is actually through networking and talking to people and seeing what industries are complementary to the experience I have is where I discovered entrepreneurship in the coaching and consulting space. I had sold advertising for years. Being a business owner meant like a brick and mortar store. And I was like, that's not for me.
Yeah.
So I learned about, you know, coaching and the consulting industry and just really studied it and tried to figure it out. And I wish I could tell you like, oh, I made a decision and it was miraculous and it was fun and it was happy. No, it took me a very long time. Find the problem, identify the problem, see where I wanted to go and then actually take that. It was probably a solid 2 years. It was the middle of 2017 when I started to go really unsettled. Learn about the space at the end of 2017. I like to tell people I spent all of 2018 getting ready to get ready, right? I did everything. I followed all of the blueprints by all of the gurus, none of which yielded any clients or any money. So that was fun. And then 2019 was the year that it really all started to click for me. And that's when I left my corporate career and then had a second baby. So Georgia was born in June of 2019, and she was kind of my launch point, right? I just didn't go back after my maternity leave. And I'm now literally on the third iteration of my business. We've done over $2 million in revenue since 2019. And it's been wild and fun and crazy.
It's so amazing. I often call entrepreneurship the long and winding road. And I love that you called out one of the early traps that many new, especially women entrepreneurs, fall into. So you leave the job and then you have all the trappings, you take all the free courses, you follow all the gurus, you spend a lot of time doing things that don't get you any clients when the only thing you need when you first start a business is clients, you know, people to pay you. So it's funny, you know, with everything that's going on in the corporate space right now, you know, post-COVID, the great resignation, the numbers haven't really changed for women in corporate for the last really 3 decades. I mean, if you look at the number of women in the C-suite, we're barely moving that needle. And I know you have some data that shows that women are launching businesses like crazy right now. So what do you see happening with women in entrepreneurship?
Yeah, so I think that's what's happening is what you just said. The data tells us that women are, you know, we're educated. There are more and more women with graduate degrees, undergraduate degrees, right? Advanced education is happening, but we haven't been able to move the needle in the corporate space. So what happened, I think, is women were like, cool, you don't want to make a space for us. You don't want to support us. You don't want to meet us where we are. You don't want to give us the job or the title. We're going to do it ourselves. And so the data is now telling us that women are starting businesses at almost twice the rate of men. Obviously, the data has accelerated since 2020 because of the pandemic. But if you go out and look at some of that data, like literally 2 to 1. Women are starting businesses faster and faster. And I think Deb, it's finally like, okay, cool. You're not going to make a space for me to work where I can be myself, where I can be open and honest, where it supports my lifestyle, where it supports my family, where it supports my goals. I'm going to go do it myself. And then what I'm finding is that these women are now like, okay, cool. How do I do everything possible to not recreate the corporate space that I left, right? How do I create a space that supports all sorts of different types of people who work for me? So I think women are starting businesses at a faster rate, but then also wanting to create a space that they didn't get or couldn't find in a couple of careers.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's a clean slate. So you can be who you want to be, do what you want to do, make the impact that you want to make. However, you have a danger of being your worst boss ever. That was one of my early podcast episodes. You know, you can be so hard on yourself, so critical, the mindset challenges. So what do you see? I know you say the future of business is feminine. Are there some mindset traps that women in particular tend to fall into when they get started on the entrepreneurial journey? Because as much as you might hate it, or as much as it feels uncomfortable, there was security in that corporate job, that paycheck, that paid time off. If I miss anything in my corporate job, it's the PTO. But what are some of the mindset traps that you see your clients fall into?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the biggest one is lack of trust, right? We do not trust ourselves to make decisions. And it took me a long time to like even be able to say that out loud, Deb, because it felt like I was just throwing rocks at female entrepreneurs. But I see it over and over and over again. The question of, what do you think I should do? What do you think I should do? What do you think I should do? Should I do it this way or should I do it this way? Should I charge this or should I charge that, right? Like we had so little trust of ourselves to make good decisions, to do the right things, to show up in a powerful way, to get our clients results, that we actually wind up, I think you could share with me before we hit record that, you know, we're starting businesses twice as quickly, but we're not making as much money. And I think it all comes back to this thing, which is trust. Trusting ourselves as the leader of our organization, because like you said, that security of a paycheck and PTO also came with a guide, with a blueprint. There was a job description. It told you what to do. And your annual review, it told you whether you're doing a good job or not. Like literally our entire lives, we have looked externally for validation. Are we being successful? And whether that is in the grades we got in school, colleges that we got into, then the careers that we got, you know, even did we marry up? Types of houses that we live in, all of those different things are all external ways of looking successful. And so we have used those external forms of validation for so long. And then when you become an entrepreneur, there's nobody to validate you.
Right.
And that all of that drama comes up for us where we're like, oh my gosh, what do I do? Nobody is telling me what to do. And the number of women over the years have said to me, like, Ryan, just tell me what to do. And I'm like, I could do that. Like, there is a blueprint. There is a way to get business done. But you have to learn to trust yourself first, because if you don't trust yourself, your clients are never going to trust you. The employees that you want to hire are never going to trust you. So I think one of the biggest traps we find is this lack of trust, this need for external validation and external guidance to make decisions to support our business.
And do you find that that's why so many women, when they first get started, really smart, accomplished leaders in business? So once you make the leap, you're in a completely new space. You have no roadmap, you have no blueprint. You've never been here before. There's no past experience to guide you. So do you feel that women are especially vulnerable at that stage and they're easily sold into programs and things like that that they don't need? Because you and I share the same value, is that you need to do you. There's no road that's going to be paved that you're going to walk down that's going to be exactly like someone else's. But that's a trap that I see many clients fall into.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I never thought of it that way. I like that question a lot. Like, is that vulnerability what leads us to all the
critical formulas, right?
The consumption of information, because we think that if we just keep learning, because that worked for us in our corporate careers, right? We get another degree and another certificate. It's more job security, a promotion, a raise, right? And so I think that some of that happens. I've never thought of it that way, but it's probably very true.
Yeah. I mean, you see some people on LinkedIn and their profiles have a dozen letters after them. I always look at those profiles and say, oh my God, you must not have been very confident about your ability to just do your job and make money. And what they don't understand is this is actually deferring your success. Sure. You know, the other thing they do is take a lot of online courses, right? Yes. And expect that by following someone else's success formula, they too will be successful if they follow those exact same steps. And so that's why you see so much cookie cutter businesses out there, because one of the primary things that you need to learn when you make this leap is that you are the culmination of your entire lifetime of experience. It could be what you were passionate about when you were 12 years old and your experience in the corporate world and the things that interest you and turn you on, that's all part of your business journey. So how do you guide women into this place of trust and understanding that they already have the answers inside of them? Is that what you're saying? Or?
Yeah, I think it's the idea of there are times when we need new skills. So I am not anti-learning. I'll be very, very clear about that. Right? Like, I love to learn. I love to read books. I love to listen to podcasts. I love to study business and trends and all those different things. If you get an idea, running with the idea. So often I'll be like, I had this amazing idea, but then I talked to my friend about it and they said it was stupid, or I couldn't find anybody else doing it, so I figured it wasn't a good idea, or I found 12 other people already doing it, so I decided that I was going to. So for me, it's more about following the nudges and following your intuition and then supporting that with education instead of the other way around. We're like, I'm going to go get education to figure out what to do with it. I want to flip-flop that. Like, it's like, I have an amazing idea. I'm going to follow my gut. I'm going to follow the intuition. I'm going to use the network and the experience that I have that you just described, Deb. And then I'm going to learn what I need to know. So maybe it's like, I do all this and I actually realize that I know this, this, and this, but I still really need this. I'm going after that. So for me, and learning to trust yourself, it's what do you want? I remember whose book was it? I'll remember by the time we're done. She said that when they have these retreats, they ask women, what do you want? And she said, sometimes there are women who will wind up in tears because they can't remember the last time somebody asked them that question. What do you want? And so for me, that's where we start. What do you want? What kind of business do you want? What kind of, you know, how much money do you want to make? How many hours a week do you want to work? Like, really starting with, what do I want? And then working backwards instead of, oh, so-and-so has a blueprint, I'm going to follow it. Because that was my story, right? I followed a blueprint to the letter and it made me a lot of money. It also made me miserable, right? Yeah. It also made me like I had created a business that did not support any of the things that I wanted, right? All I had done was replaced a corporate job with a business.
Yeah. It's almost like women do come with a blueprint, but it's right. One that's culturally generated and sure. Reinforced by our families, reinforced by corporate cultures. And so we're really good at taking instructions. And the corporate world is very male dominated. So it's very analytical in nature. So if we talk about the masculine and feminine, you know, masculine energy is much more analytical. It's like, let's go do it. Where female energy is much more reflective and, like you said, intuitive. Yeah. And yet we kind of lose that ability to trust the intuition in the corporate world. So when you say the future of business is female, what do you mean by that?
What it means to me is that as women, that we have a responsibility right now. Like, for some of us in our lifetimes, there was a time when women could not take out a loan without their husband or their son signing for it. So we are still at the beginning of women in business. So like you said, Deb, you're like, it's been 30 years. We haven't made any true progress, but like, it's still the beginning. Literally in our lifetime, there was a time where this conversation wouldn't even be happening. I mean, not just the technology piece of the conversation. The conversation of women owning businesses and starting businesses at twice the rate of men would not have been a thing because it wasn't allowed to happen. So when I say the future of business is female, I say that it is our responsibility as women who are starting businesses, who are feeling this nudge, to show up and create companies that make an impact. To not stay, and I think you shared the number with me that women are only earning 30 cents to the dollar in the entrepreneurial space to our male counterparts. Like, it is our responsibility to change that. It is our responsibility to create socially conscious companies that don't just recreate what we left. And I'm seeing it. And that's part of why I think I'm so passionate about this, is I'm seeing these women leave the corporate world and they have no real example of leadership and growth. And so they just recreate what they left. And I'm like, no. That's not what we're trying to do here. We're trying to change that. We're trying to create amazing companies that people want to come work for, that do give people the space to work when and where they need to, right? That do give single moms the space to drop their children off at school, that do give dads an opportunity to take a paternity leave when their wife has a baby or their partner has a baby. So to me, it's about really being socially conscious of creating these companies. So all the things that we didn't like about the corporate world, all the limitations we felt, all the times we felt overlooked, that our opinion wasn't heard, that somebody talked over us, that our idea wasn't a good idea to the dude next to us presented it. It's our responsibility as women to make sure that we do not create that inside of our own.
That's fantastic. And that's the opportunity to make an impact, right? To make a change, to change the things that aren't in alignment with your vision and your values. Right. And I think a lot of women business owners are committed to living within their values and hiring people that share their values and working with people that share their values. Now, there's got to be more to the future of business is feminine, other than just flexible work hours and allowing people to live their lives. So when you think about feminine leadership and you think about the mindset needed, you know, we've talked about the pay gap in entrepreneurship is 260% wider than the pay gap in corporate. Why is that?
Fear, right? It is complete and total fear. It's the same reason why a man will apply for a job that he's only 50% qualified for, but a woman won't apply until she's 90% qualified. I think that same thing has followed us into entrepreneurship, where a dude's like, absolutely, I can charge, you know, 10 grand for that. And woman's like, I'm not sure. I've not done it before. So I'm actually going to charge, well, I'm going to charge 3,500. So I think it really has a lot to do with that same idea of like that belief in ourselves to really show up and ask for and demand the market rate for what we do. I also think some of it is lack of research of what the market rate is. I know in the beginning, I didn't do any research. What should I price my stuff at? All that different stuff. So now, I mean, I'm obviously business number three at this point, and I have done a lot of research in pricing our program for what we do now. But in the beginning, I didn't. I was like, okay, well, it's going to take me X amount of hours, and I'd like to make Y. And, you know, so I think we just don't take the time to do that, or we doubt our worth in that way.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've done a lot of work with my clients on stepping into a bigger vision of what you're worth. And, you know, part of that is just understanding that it's not based on your self-worth. I think that's what trips women up most of all, is like, well, what is an hour of my time worth?
Right.
Well, no one's buying an hour of your time, right? So no one is underestimating the value of the impact that they're making through the work that they're doing as well. So it's very interesting. It's very interesting. So let's unpack this a little bit. Why do you think women are underestimating their worth? Why are we in this spot? I was in one of my masterminds and my only male cohort member said, well, I could, you know, just charge someone for an hour of my time, but an hour of my time would be $2,400. And none of the women in the room said anything, but they looked, I could tell by looking in their eyes that they were thinking, oh my God, I would never think of charging $2,400 for an hour of my time. So how do we get past that?
I don't have a good answer for that. If I did, I think it'd be pretty amazing. I think it starts with knowledge. The first step of anything is awareness. It's awareness, the idea that, yeah, men are charging, would you just say 260% more, or the wage gap is 260% larger in entrepreneurship. I think the awareness of that, and then really figuring out why. Why did I price my stuff the way that I priced my stuff? Like, where am I at? What am I running into? And, you know, sales is my background. And I would argue that a lot of it goes back to the challenges that we have with sales. Most women don't like sales. Sales is a dirty word. It's something they don't want to do. They don't want to pressure people. They don't want to seem spammy. They don't want to seem disingenuous. They don't want to, you know, come off as pushy or aggressive or any of those other things. And I think that oftentimes will cause us some of that gap too, Deb, is that idea that, like, I don't want to be pushy and I don't want to be spammy. I want to serve people. I want to help people. We have this idea that, like, we want to help people, so we can't charge a lot of money for it. Those two things are mutually exclusive for a lot of women. And it's no wonder, it's social conditioning. You look at the most helpful jobs in the world, firefighters, cops, nurses, teachers. When we help people, we don't make a lot of money.
That's
basically what we're told. And then when you see what we perpetuate about wealthy people and people who are running wealthy companies or companies that are doing wildly successful, those people are all seen as bad guys. We internalize that. Find me a movie where the rich guy is a good guy. Find me a movie where the sales guy is a good guy. And notice they're all guys. Don't even try to find me a movie with a rich woman that isn't married to a rich man. So, I mean, I think so much of it boils down to that story and that programming is the idea of, like, helping people and making money do not feel congruent to a lot of women. I think that same thing has followed us into entrepreneurship, where a dude's like, absolutely, I can charge, you know, 10 grand for that. And woman's like, I'm not sure. I've not done it before. So I'm actually going to charge, well, I'm going to charge $3,500. So I think it really has a lot to do with that same idea of, like, that belief in ourselves to really show up and ask for and demand the market rate for what we do.
Yeah, that's so interesting. When clients come to you for the very first time, what are the primary challenges that they're facing? Do you find a pattern that there are these kind of unique traps that women in particular fall into when they're starting a business?
Sure, absolutely. So what I do now is a little different. So I don't necessarily consult anymore. I lead a leadership collective. So we are a mastermind, a community of women who come together. A lot of our education and connection is peer led. But I will tell you that the problem that they have, Deb, is that they want all of the things that you and I are discussing, and they've amassed some level of success. So when women come to me, when they join me in the room, they are, you know, their businesses are not brand new. They're in the six to multiple six figure range. What they've done is they've bottomed out. They've hit a ceiling. They can't figure out where to go next. They're starting to feel alone and isolated. They're finding that the more successful they become, the less people they find to that they feel comfortable talking about what's going on in their businesses and their life. They find fewer and fewer people who look like them. There's a whole lot of people in the beginning of business though. It's so easy to find community in that first 100,000, couple 100,000, because that's where everybody is.
Right.
But it tells us only 12% of women make it to six figures, and then only 4% make it to seven, which means the pond gets real small all of a sudden. And it's like, I don't know where to go to brainstorm this idea. Like, I know that I want to hire and I want to create a very conscious workplace, but I don't know who would I have read that job description? Who has done this before? So when women come to us, it's typically because they've hit that ceiling of what everybody else is doing, and they're ready to start looking left and looking right and really forging their own path. A lot of women are in situations like me. Like, I built a business. It makes a lot of money. I hate it. You know, they're in that space, or they're in a space where they're like, okay, well, I was doing it this way because somebody told me I should, but I've got this new idea. And again, they don't necessarily need coaching or a blueprint. They want community and idea sharing and connection and, you know, somebody to brainstorm with for 30 minutes, not somebody to tell them what to do. They're kind of out of that space. So for me, they're coming in being like, okay, cool. I'm here for it. I'm here for this conversation we're having right now. The future of business is female. I want to create a company that matters. I want to do big things, and I want to run with people who want those things.
Yeah, there comes a time when you absolutely know enough. Like, it's not about the next thing or, you know, implementing a new marketing tactic. And
right.
I so totally get it, because when you're at a certain level in business, you don't feel comfortable sharing with a group of women who aren't there yet. First of all, they can't support you. You know, they haven't been there yet. Mm-hmm. And secondly, it can feel a little boastful, or comparing minds can get triggered in those situations. And it is very isolating as a woman entrepreneur who is succeeding and scaling to seven figures or eight figures or what have you. It's very interesting. So how does that model work with your clients? So you have a mastermind and it's peer led. What does that mean? I'm curious.
Yeah. So all of our content is driven by our community. So we host weekly events inside of Be in the Room Dead, and we rotate for different topics, different styles of events, but all led by the community. So we do peer led education. So all of the women in Be in the Room have an opportunity to educate in their expertise. And it doesn't even have to be your business's expertise. So maybe you run a coaching company, but you've gotten really good at hiring. So you can lead a training on like how I have perfected my hiring process. So that's led by our community. We also do what we call a peer advisory board. So again, instead of your traditional coaching model where there's one person saying, okay, Deb, this is how you do this, this, and this, we come together and somebody says, hey, this is the circumstance that I'm in right now. And the whole community gets stuck. Have you looked at it this way? Have you thought of it this way? Oh, in my space, I've done this. Or, oh, I worked with a client who did it this way once. Or when I was going through this, this happened. So again, instead of it being one person saying, hey, this is how to do it, it's the community. And then finally, we do peer collaboration. So we throw out a topic and we pop everybody into small Zoom rooms and we talk about a different topic. Recently, we talked about recession, right? The recession word, the R word is getting thrown around. How are you handling it? Is it impacting you? Is it not impacting you? What are you seeing? Sometimes we talk about hiring. Sometimes we talk about having difficult conversations. Sometimes we talk about personal stuff, right? In the beginning of summer, we had a conversation of how do you handle the chaos of the summer if you have kids? So we're really just having conversations that, again, the people in our day-to-day life don't necessarily understand the demands that go into a successful professional woman. Not because they don't want to, but because they've just never been.
Yeah. So it must be important to you to curate the right people to join that community. So what does that woman look like? Who's the ideal client to join?
Yeah. So our ideal client is usually around $200,000 to $1.2 million in revenue. That's who we've really curated so far. We find that it feels like a really large gap, but it's not mm-hmm. as big as you think. So that kind of the income level. We always say, you know, the common denominator is women who are, it's actually funny, I have it written down. I wrote it down on a card. This was an idea given to me by Julie Ciardi. And Julie, she's really smart. She keeps little note cards. And so I wrote it out. Like, who are the women that we are bringing together? But for me, you know, they're open-minded. They're high achieving. They're open-hearted. They're ambitious. They are those women who are looking for more out of life, right? Like they just know that fire in their belly where they're like, I am made for greatness in some meaningful way. It's really important that the women in our community are open to sharing their genius and their network. We don't do this like competition. I can't introduce you to that person because we don't do that. Like we are open. We share. They love supporting others. They're open to new ideas. They're growth focused. We always say that we really bring together bold women, disruptors, women who want to, again, do things differently and not for the sake of doing things differently, but because they really do want to make a change in the world. So it's definitely more of a psychographic than a demographic. Mm-hmm. And we're also not limited to those income levels. So I'm not letting somebody into our community because their business has made $250,000 if they had a 25-year corporate career before they started a business. To me, that person still has an immense amount of value they bring to the community, and our community could be a great resource for them. So I also don't cut people off at seven figures, right? If you come in and say, hey, I have a business making $5 million, I'm not letting you in. That's who we have attracted so far. We launched in January. We have about 42 members, I think, right now. And that's really who we have brought together. And that seems to fit very, very well. But again, I'm more focused on the psychographic and the desire than the demographic. Because like I said, the definition of beginner is a loose one, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. If our listeners want to learn more about how to connect with you or learn more about do you call it a mastermind?
So I have been leaning away from masterminds, and I'm going to mm-hmm. tell you why, because I feel like the coaching space has kind of destroyed the word mastermind and masterminds yeah. into coaching programs, which is really not the original definition. So we call it a conscious leadership collective. Our goal is to bring together smart, successful, high achieving women and literally raise the consciousness level of those women so we can intentionally create life and businesses that we love. And so I use that word. Traditionally, the word mastermind probably makes the most sense. But I have, just from that perspective, I don't ever want anybody to be disappointed or frustrated when they get into the community and they learn that it's not a coaching program, that it's not, there's not a blueprint here, that it's not a step-by-step guide. So I shy away from that word because expectations are very important. But, you know, we have women that refer to us as a community, as a mastermind, as a collective. I use the word collective.
That sounds great. So if people want to learn more, how do they find you?
Sure. Beintheroom.org is our website. Beintheroom.org/join actually has all of the details about the collective itself. You are welcome to, we have a Facebook group called Be in the Room that we'd love for you to join if it sounds like a space that you would like to be a part of. I am a very open and avid networker, so I love connecting with people on all platforms. So I'm just Ryan with two N's, Downey, and I can literally be found on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn.
Yes, that's Ryan with two N's.
Yes.
Dowdy, D-O-W-D-Y. Ryan, this has been such a great conversation about women and leadership and business. If there was one piece of advice that you had to someone who might be just thinking about making the leap from corporate or may have already made the leap and in that space of, I don't know, what should I do? What should I do? What's the number one piece of advice you would give to her?
Trust yourself. Trust yourself. Spend some time by yourself, whether it's going for a walk or going to a coffee shop alone, and really think about, what do I want? Not what should I do? What do I want? And really listen to yourself. The ideas, the nudges, the voice that you've been ignoring your entire life because society told us to, it will talk to you. And so that's my biggest thing is, you know, stop looking outside of yourself for answers. Look outside of yourself for the skills you don't have, right? The network and the community is really, really important. But the ideas, what do I want to do? What do I want to create? How do I want to put it together? Those are all inside of you. Like, my thought process is, if you have an idea to start a business, if it's even crossing your mind to leave that stable, comfortable place that you're sitting in right now, that the rest of it is inside of you too. You just need to sit still long enough to hear it.
Yeah. Thank you for that. For me, that meant a silent meditation retreat, but I do things to the extreme sometimes.
I think at some point in time, I would probably do it. I don't even know if I'm far enough in my journey that I could be silent for as long as they asked.
Yeah. The trick with silent meditation retreats is you can stop talking, but you can't stop the inner dialogue.
Great. Oh, that's so fun. I want to hear more about that.
Yeah. Ryan, thank you so much. Again, my friends, that's the Conscious Leadership Collective, beintheroom.org/join if you want more information. And thank you so much, Ryan, for sharing your wisdom with us today. It's been such a pleasure to have you. That's it for now, my friends. See you next time. Thanks for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed this show, please head over to iTunes and subscribe and leave us a review. And be sure to hop over to the Life After Corporate Facebook group and join other growing entrepreneurs to get weekly tips on how to create more money and meaning doing work you love.